Making Dry Bones Live. Hello, Malcolm here. Welcome to Tuesday Teaching Tips, episode 335 and part 7 of the current series based on Haddon Robinson's wonderful book, Biblical Preaching. Read it, buy it. It's fantastic. And we're in chapter 7. Now, so far we've got to the point where, well, we have a point. We know what the point of the text is. We've discovered that. And we have made it relevant, made sure it's relevant to our audience. And we've now developed an outline which makes sense. So what's next? What's next is to make those dry bones live, because all you have so far is a skeleton. And a skeleton is, let's face it, necessary for life, but it's inadequate on its own. Now, later in the show notes, you'll see that I have given you the outline of the chapter from the book, so go ahead and read that another time. So I'm not going to repeat what he says far more eloquently than me. What I will do is add some observations of my own on, well, the experiences I've had of illustrations and how to use them, or perhaps how not to use them. So number one, check your facts. If you're going to offer a fact in your lesson, check it's accurate. I'll never forget the day that my friend David came up to me after a sermon. I had quoted some particularly impressive statistics to back up my point. The problem was those statistics were wrong, or at least I'd interpreted them wrongly. Statistics and numbers are not my strong point, as anybody who knows me will tell you. My friend David had studied mathematics at Cambridge University. He understood them a lot better than me. I needed his input, not only about the actual facts, but how to use them. So I needed to learn from him about interpreting numbers. And these days, whenever I see an interesting statistic or about the Bible or some other aspect of human existence, I double check them. I triple check them before I share them. And not only that they are accurate, but that I have interpreted them accurately. Ever since my conversation with David, I've made it my habit to listen to a BBC podcast called More or Less, which is about how to interpret numbers and statistics. Where are your weaknesses in the area of using facts? Have you got a person you can speak to who can help you to check the accuracy of them, but also that you're using them well? Check your facts. Number two, vary your illustrations. Back in the 1990s, there was a fad amongst our church leadership for using stories from a book series called Chicken Soup for the Soul. Perhaps some of you remember them. I think they're still around. And additionally, I found some Bible illustration software which used quotes from books and famous people to illustrate scriptural points. My sermons in Manchester for the next 12 months were littered with quotes from these books and from the software. And I mean littered. I had a quote for every point. I had a quote for every sub-point. And guess what? They lost their power. The first two or three times, very powerful, very helpful. After that, the people listening to me got bored. They got too used to the idea. In fact, I ended up subconsciously making points fit my quotes and stories. It wasn't what I was trying to do, but I realized looking back that that ended up happening. So, variety is the spice of life is the main point here. Well, the spice of sermons. Use a variety of illustrations. Use stories, use quotes, use personal sharing, use facts, use visuals, use as many different ways to illustrate the truth of your lessons as you can. Don't use them all in one sermon, but don't use the same kind of illustration all the time. Thirdly and finally, make your stories real. Now, I hope they are actually real if they're a story and you're saying they're real, but I don't mean that. What I mean is, help people to inhabit and to get into your stories in their imagination. See, stories need enough detail and emotion to connect for your audience. Not too much, or it becomes about the details and about the feelings rather than the point, but enough so that they can be experientially enter the situation. You can see this in the parables of Jesus. In his teaching, people get caught up in it. They get into the same kind of feelings as they understand what's going on. For example, let's say you're making a point about being caught out in a lie and how bad that is. You could tell a story about being in just such a situation at work. You could say something like, I was in a meeting and my boss asked me whether I had completed the project. I said, yes. Then my coworker said, no, you haven't. I was talking to Bob who said it still needs finishing. I was caught in a lie. I was embarrassed. It's a story that may be helpful on some level, but it's not got any power. Instead, you could tell the story more like this. My boss asked me to complete a piece of work that I found very difficult. I was stressed out. I was anxious. I was feeling really inadequate because I knew it was beyond me, really. It's beyond my capacity to do this. And I didn't sleep the night before the day of the meeting to discuss progress. I came into that meeting frazzled, Knowing I hadn't finished the work, I was afraid that I would be held to account. And the boss asked me if I had finished it, and I said, yes. And I instantly felt relieved because I thought I'd got him off my back, but I also felt guilty. My mouth was dry, you know. My hands were all clammy. I knew I had, well, not only lied, I'd sinned. How could I do this? How could I lie? What kind of Christian at work am I? And then my co-worker, Jim, piped up and challenged me. He stated the truth, which was that the project was not finished and I was caught out. The boss, he just looked at me, didn't say anything. I wanted the ground to swallow me up. I felt my face go red. I looked at the ground. I didn't know what to say. And you could go on to talk more about that. It depends on the details of the story, what you want to say, and your audience as to what's important. But and that version of the story isn't perfect, of course, either. But it at least has more power than the earlier, drier version. So what kind of illustrations do you use to bring home your points? How do you help the truth of the Bible have its impact on the hearts of those listening to you? I hope my 3 points are helpful. Let me know what you think. And leave a comment, please, where we can all see it, because we learn best when we learn from each other in community. If you can think of anybody that might benefit from this, please pass the link on. If you'd like a copy of my free ebook on spiritual disciplines, then sign up for my newsletter at the website, malcolmcox.org, and you can email me from there. Also, you might like to consider joining our AIM program. We've just been doing homiletics. You can find all the details on the website, aimukandireland.com, and you can email us if you want to know more about it on the email address courses@aimukandireland.com. Love to have you involved. The next thing we're going to be doing is spiritual counseling and that kind of area. Nonetheless, we will next week have part 8 of the Biblical Preaching Series. I hope you're finding them useful. Let me know. And until the next time, remember, keep calm and carry on teaching. Take care. And God bless.